The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Good morning this morning. Again, this is C.A. Nuri, and guess where? I'm here again on the Clock with Aaron Green. This is On the Clock, and it's Monday, the 3rd of April. And this is going to be a short week because Friday is Good Friday. But On the Clock, we engage organizations, institutions, social and cultural leaders, and ordinary people to better understand the impact of public policy, private sector development, and emerging social and consumer trends. On the Clock, we have conversations that help us understand and navigate a rapidly changing Bahamas. As you know, Erin had an accident at home, and she is home convalescing. But of course, through technology, we know that she's able to join us via Zoom. I'm going to be connecting to her shortly and make sure she's there. Erin, can you hear me? Not yet. Erin, as soon as you're able to hear me and then turn on your microphone, just let me know you're here so we can start our discussion for today, right? She still can't hear me yet?
Good morning.
There you go. Good morning this morning, Erin. How you doing?
Look here, I am good. I'm glad to hear your voice excluded just now.
Yes. I'm just glad that you connected. I said, boy, this technology could look like it's going to fail us today.
No. It's amazing. It is amazing. I really thought I would have issues connecting from the area that I'm in, but so far, so good.
Good. But you live in the suburbs, man. You live near on the Eastern Road there.
I live near the ocean where all the salt water is.
Stand corrected. Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. Go ahead.
It deteriorates all of the, you know, it's sometimes we are unable to calculate the true cost of things, and being this close to the ocean, while it is awesome, I love it, I don't want to give it up for any reason in the world, it comes with costs. We don't normally see, we don't take into account, and I have to find the balance in all of it.
Yes, but as usual, we have housekeeping. Before we get into our discussion, go ahead with your housekeeping, and we'll just jump into discussion and start hashing it up and down.
Absolutely. Good morning, Bahamas. Again, good morning, Mr. Nuri, and good morning to my producer. It is Monday, the 3rd of April. We are in the fourth month of the year, and it is getting hot. I want to start off this morning by reminding us about Light It Up Blue in Parliament Square. The signature pink of the House of Parliament is going blue for the month of April. This, as the country recognizes Autism Awareness Month under the theme, It's Okay to Be a Little Different. In fact, those little differences were celebrated by REACH at the Light It Up Blue Festival on Saturday. Prime Minister Philip Davis noting the government's commitment to support children and living with autism. A number of children were also honored as 2023 REACH Star students for their continued development and excellence at their respective schools. So throughout the month of April, listen out for opportunities for you and your family to support the local autism awareness movement. And that's going to be awesome. And I just wanted to make a note, Mr. Nuri, if the autism awareness, you know, the autism community could advocate and lobby for the recognition of their special day, their awareness day, and their programming with a whole month of turning Rawson Square blue in the nighttime, then I want to encourage all kinds of special interest communities, groups, NGOs to think about ways that they can also raise awareness about their issue, partner with the government or community and business leaders in a similar way, right? Like Carmichael City 2000, imagine lighting up the intersection, the businesses in the intersection, Carmichael and Blue Hill Road, with your organization or community's special color. That would be awesome. Also, Mr. Newry, April is National Poetry Writing Month. And for the month of April, Bahamian poets have committed to writing one poem a day. And then I'm sure I'm going to make some space to invite some of these poets on the air to share what they've been doing and any activities going on for the month of April. But I know you're a poet, Mr. Newry. Have you written anything yet for the month? Okay.
Yes.
Oh, there you go. You have? Good, good.
No, we got disconnected. I'm forgive me for that. Go ahead.
No problem. Are you taking part in the this month's activities by writing a poem a day for the month of April?
Who knows? Who knows? And I saw that invitation, and I may just take up that challenge. I'm working on a new book now, so I'm editing at this present time. So I'm busy with that, but I love new challenges, so we'll see. I just want to wish as you mentioned, I want to wish happy birthday to Obadiah Michael Smith. I know he just celebrated his birthday, and for his birthday event, the owners of the Tiki Bar on Bay Street hosted him, where he had some poetry recitals and had guests given reading poetry and stuff like that. So happy birthday to him.
That is awesome. That is awesome. You can go online and check out the Office of the Prime Minister for some of the activities that have already taken place during for Poetry Day and for our local National Poetry Month, including, I think, readings by Tanise, just a phenomenal Bahamian and a phenomenal Bahamian writer on top of that. I think it's going to be exciting. But Mr. Newry, I want to invite you. I got a gracious donation from Patricia McCullis-Glinton and Glinton McCullis and Nico McCullis from Guanima Press Limited. And they donated a number of copies of the book Luska.
Luska.
And other fantastic tales and folklore from the Bahamas.
Nice, nice. Few people know what Luska is, so I'm excited to receive this gift. So thanks.
Yeah, man. So what I want to do is I want to give them out as we lead into the 50th independence. And since April is National Poetry Month, I definitely want to give out a number of books during this month. I think I'm going to start with this. I need your help, Mr. Newry.
Oh, okay.
Because I hear that you know about all things mythical and folklore.
One or two things.
Yeah. So I'm going to need you to help me understand. The bulk of my PhD work has been on the Chicchani. Okay. I need you to help me understand some more about other mythological and old-time creatures, animals, and stories. And then we're going to figure out how to give away these books to the Bahamian public.
Good.
Cool. So that's what I want to talk about this morning, Mr. Newry. On the front of today's Guardian, there are two headlines on the bottom fold. One is teenager sexually assaulted by two men. The second, if you move to the right of the Guardian, in the little orange box at the bottom, it says, Maynard Gibson, specific law needed to deal with marital rape. Right? And so I want to start there. And in today's Tribune, there's another article, No Bail for Exuma Man on Sexual Charge. This weekend, it was reported, this is just me now, not from the papers. This weekend, it was reported that a 16-year-old girl was allegedly abducted and sexually assaulted by two unknown assailants. The details provided in the report lead me to infer, to believe that she was raped. Maybe she wasn't. The article in the papers, the articles that I read, didn't mention, in fact, the report that I read online from the Royal Bahamas Police Force never used the word rape. It only used the word sexual assault. If I can read from The Guardian right now, a 16-year-old girl who was walking on Blue Hill Road around midnight on Sunday, was abducted by two men and sexually assaulted, police said. Police said the victim was approached by two men who were driving a black Nissan March. Men abducted her and took her to bushes in the area of Munnings Drive, where they sexually assaulted her, police said. The men then fled the scene. I want the article in the Tribune. No bail for Exuma man on sexual assault charge. A 19-year-old man was remanded on Friday after being accused of sexually assaulting a 19-year-old woman in Exuma after he had offered her a ride home from a club. Rashad Sayers stood before Magistrate Algernon Allen on a charge of rape. According to police reports, at around 4:30 a.m. on March 24th in Exuma, the accused allegedly offered a woman a ride after leaving a nightclub in the area of Airport Road. The suspect then proceeded to drive her to outside a residence on Boulevard Road, where he forced the victim to have sex with him. After the assault, Sayers allegedly pushed her out of the car before fleeing the scene and leaving her stranded. Due to the nature of the offense, the accused was not required to enter a plea before the magistrate. He was informed that his matter would be transferred to the Supreme Court by way of voluntary bill of indictment. The article clearly says no bail for Exuma man on sexual assault charge, right? The article in The Guardian says teenager sexually assaulted by two men. I believe that these two stories are talking about women that are the victims of rape, that the act that was perpetrated against them was rape. That's what I believe after reading the articles and reading the police report. My question is, why are we not using the word rape? In fact, in the Tribune article, the word rape is used to identify the charge, right? Only on a charge of rape. Why wouldn't the headline say no bail for Exuma man on rape charge? Now, here's why it's of concern for me, Mr. Nuri. One of the reasons why it's of concern for me is this is not the first time that I've seen it. In fact, we can couple this, the movement in law from using the term statutory rape, which would indicate that you have had intercourse with someone who does not have the authority to give consent to intercourse, right? Statutory rape with unlawful sexual intercourse. And now we see on multiple occasions what appears to be the replacing of the word rape with sexual assault. And my concern is two things. First, here we are lobbying for the recognition of rape within marriage, while it appears as if the state and potentially and possibly the media and the state who are still interrogating this, are removing the word rape from their vocabulary, right? The second concern is, can we properly convey the nature of these crimes if we don't use the appropriate language? Will people understand how heinous an adult engaging with a minor for sexual intercourse is if we don't call it statutory rape? Will we continue to perpetuate the idea that some of these girls are just pass and taking advantage of well-meaning men if we don't call it what it is, which is statutory rape? I wanted to open the conversation up to the public. I know it's a bit of a hot topic issue, right? But I think it's something that we need to talk about. In the same way, in the Guardian article, Maynard Gibson says specific law needed to deal with marriage. I say that in the same way that Alison Maynard Gibson says it in the article, what I am expressing is Maynard Gibson in this article, and the she's in another article in today's Guardian, is suggesting that we get it done. You know, that we just focus on those who are most vulnerable and make the changes necessary to ensure that they can access protection when needed. So I want to open it up to the public as well, Mr. Newry, if you don't mind.
No, man, it's a heavy topic. I have no problem commenting on it. So, but it's a heavy topic you brought up early on a Monday. So we should see where it goes.
Yeah, man. I mean, there's lots of heavy topics. It is, I know we are in the Easter week. We're going to lighten it up as we go through the week. But I think this is an important topic. And I can tell you why. It's an important topic because it impacts the lives of vulnerable people. It's an important topic because I think what the former AG is pointing out is that these are easy problems to solve. It is a matter of putting forth legislation, right, and continuing that process. That these are things that we can do for ourselves and for one another.
But let me interject here and then ask you some questions in response. And I see we have a caller on the line already, and I just want to acknowledge the caller that'll be coming right now. Last year, when I said last year, it's before December, the government said that they're going to bring out laws in terms of marital rape and citizenship or equality right. for women. So we are waiting to see when these laws are going to be bring about pass and get it done. And I assume this is why the former Attorney General, Ms. Alison Maynard, is saying, just get it done. This talking thing is taking too long. Recently, and it's again last year, we had a minister who said that a 12-year-old can give consent, right? It's not automatically use of the term rape, right? So I want to throw that in the mix when we have our leaders debating whether a minor, a definite minor, can give consent or not, or is it automatically statutory rape or not. Of recent time, we've noticed that the ratification or the use of the word rape to more friendlier or more politically correct wording was sexual assault. And I remember we had activists on the show and where I was asking or saying that I do not understand what this sexual assault means because it seems to cover so many other things. But I understand what rape is because rape is conjures up a violent act. But sexual assault does not do that. It doesn't. It leaves you to say, okay, something happened, I guess, right? It doesn't pique your attention to say, hey, something needs to be done or to be immediately addressed. We see that the Christian church, our church in general, saying that the term rape in marriage is a harsh term. They're willing to capitulate and law, but they cannot support any law that says a husband can rape his wife. But if you change the wording, they're willing to support it. So when you bring up the conversation that why are they using these minor terms or less provoking terms, less brasher terms, I think it's purposely done. It is being purposefully done because the term rapes offend men. And once we don't have to use it, we are comfortable of moving forward. So that's why I think in a nutshell.
From the safety of my home, you know, I'd like to say that the procurement specialist gets upset when you call him a thief as well, you know? That's a heavy one to take on. And dear men, we could say it right now. Not all men. We know it's not all men. Right? We know it's not all men. But we also know that this process, not just the examination of language, the ensuring that legislation is in place to protect victims of sexual violence, is not only for the benefit of women. Men are also the victims of sexual violence, right? Men are also ridiculed for saying they were raped and encouraged to call it sexual assault as well. And so this is a gender neutral conversation. Even when we recognize that I think they call it the preponderance, the majority of victims are women, men are also victims at a smaller or a lower rate. It is troubling, Mr. Nuri. And let me just go back to the what you referenced. Yeah, we had a cabinet minister last year state that a 7-year-old can give consent, although it will not be recognized by the law. Consent. They were unfortunate and reckless statements, but sort of lead into this conversation. To what extent does language drive or shift or reinforce culture, right? And I'm very concerned that not calling it rape will diminish in people's minds how heinous the act really is, and that it is, let's go to that caller, perpetual diminishment that has led us to this place.
Yeah, the caller hung up, so continue, go ahead.
Yeah, man, next time, just cut right in, Mr. Newman. No problem. Just cut right in. So let's ask people to call. The numbers are 323-6232, 325-4316, 326-4259. You could text at 422-GR96. That's 422-4796. Do you think that sexual assault is an appropriate replacement for the word rape? Do you think we are exacerbating or making the problem worse by trying to hide it with a more comfortable and politically correct or expedient language?
Hmm. I have a text that says, great show as usual. This is a crazy world we live in. We find any way to pretty up foolishness. We are even prettying up the word rape.
It's concerning, right? But also, Mr. Newman, it's an important conversation and an ongoing conversation for a tourism and investment heavy economy, right? And we have to find balance. We have to find balance in there. If I'm Bahamas Hotel and Tourism Association, if I'm a foreign direct investor about to engage in a major housing or vacation development project, I'm going to be very concerned about the public image of the jurisdiction business in. I'm going to be very concerned about I'm going to be concerned about what is actually happening in the country, right? And I can be pragmatic and say, oh, listen, Bahamas is like everywhere else in the world. These things happen. The question is, are they happening at an alarming rate or at a rate that would suggest that the people that I am inviting here to enjoy my product or to invest in my product will be safe, right? And so we have to have the conversation, hear all the sides, and what language can we use in the media, which goes across the globe, what language can we use? What language should we use? And so another question arises, is it okay to switch the terms and to use sexual assault in replace? We all know what we're talking about.
I would prefer to actually, what does it mean for the term marital rape in marriage? And I'm still saying that too will change. That it has to be, as this trend shows itself, manifests itself, that the changing of the term rape to be specific in the different variations of rape. Rape would be the broader term, and then they have specific charges that can be used. I assume that in the immediate future, if this law about husbands possibly raping their wives, I assume that too must change. But I see we have a caller here, so I'll pass the caller through. and speak to caller. Caller, can you hear me?
John.
Go ahead. I can hear you. Go ahead, caller.
Good. Yeah. I believe the present definition of marital rape is without consent.
Yes, sir. Go on.
You understand that, right?
Yeah, without consent. Rape is without consent, yes.
Yeah, no. But you know, at the last symposium, that was actually inside the document all of the participants got. Okay? We are probably I'm going to see the it's a possibility of a consent form being attached to future marriage licenses.
I see the caller trying to be humorous, and I understand that. But we must appreciate that there are some women in marriages who are being abused by their husbands.
Yes.
And there needs to be laws to protect those women, right? And the issue is that there are a number of men who says that they can appreciate the laws, but they cannot appreciate the term rape, and there is the disconnect.
No, but the problem here, right, is the context of marriage, okay? Now, it's established in a Christian context, right? You know, and you know, you're supposed to be of a certain kind of behavior if you're a Christian. Now, everybody wants to get married, okay? Everybody now, right? But for some reason, they don't want the Christian laws to apply to them. Now, if we had written down in this document that, you know, you have to espouse a Christian view in some sort if you are planning on getting married or being married, we probably would not be having this discussion.
Yeah, because that would be unconstitutional. Yeah, right? I understand.
See, you know, so now, you know, the problem is ahead. How are you going to legislate an issue that hinges on the fact that every human being is going to have to be some kind of moral agent? And, you know, that is the impossibility because, you know, laws, you know, in any place we find laws, men and women are not able to uphold them, you know, even Christians have a problem with laws.
Okay, then. I appreciate that, caller. Thanks.
Yes, sir.
But I just want to remind you, Aaron, that in this Bahamas, we have different religions and different sects, right? Sects.
Mm-hmm.
And the Constitution governs us all. So this is a supreme law. And if the law says it's illegal to rape your wife, it's illegal to rape your wife, and therefore you will have jail time or suffer whatever consequences the law says. So I want to make sure that it's clear. And I'm not advocating that Christianity or Christians can dominate their wives and wives have no opinion on it. But I do notice that there is a trend of not using this term rape anymore. And it is concerning. And I want to know if it's purposely done. Do the women rights group are aware of it or are they comfortable with it? Are they advocating saying, hey, I want the use of the word rape in certain things because it conjures up a particular feeling and emotion that needs to be expressed? Or are they quite comfortable with it being, hey, they were sexually assaulted and moving forward?
Absolutely. To use an example to our brothers and sisters, our sistren and brethren in Latin America, in Central America and South America, right? The women's rights movement is about 100 years more advanced. A little hyperbole than the Caribbean regional women's rights movement, human rights movement. And it's a little bit different over there. You know, the attitudes are a little bit different. They're a little bit more forward thinking than we are. But in Latin America, and across the majority of the countries, and it's also about language, right? They are a language block, language and culture. They refer to the killings of women as femicide, right? And they recognize that it's important to call the killing of a woman a femicide. That's what it is, a femicide, killing of a woman. So that we collectively and individually can see the impact of the loss of the lives of the individual women and women collectively in their society. They realized a long time ago that it was important to identify the act as what it is, which is killing of a woman because she's a woman, right? And we can see that the policy work, the legal work around that, addressing femicide has also ramped up, and there's a lot of focus on it because they accurately identify what it is, and by doing that, they can more clearly acknowledge and talk about and draw to people's attention the impact of the act of killing women on society. And I think the same thing with rape. We have to stick to calling it rape. And the caller made some good points, and I think echoing what Maynard Gibson says in the article, Maynard Gibson, specific law needed to deal with marital rape, right? That it's us, it's our behavior that changes things. So I would say to people, to men in particular, don't be afraid that there is a law that recognizes the act of rape, sex without consent in a marriage, because you can protect yourself from that by living a stellar moral life, living a life of integrity, honesty, accountability, and transparency.
And Aaron, even though you say that, and even though the former Attorney General, Alton Maynard Gibson, is lobbying, I see this law not coming to fruition anytime. I have all doubts. I think this is going to linger for another 5 to 10 years. And I'll be surprised. I would be surprised if it comes through.
You know,
and I have a text here, and I read that and let you comment right now. It says, any person guilty of statutory rape should have their names and pictures published, much the way other places show sexual offenders for public interest. Any pregnant minor must give identity of the baby daddy as a matter of law. And I want you to comment on that. So that's why I don't want to interject that. And so you could comment on that.
All right. That's an awesome text. I mean, thank you for raising those issues, Texter. So in Germany, determination of paternity at birth is mandatory, right? And so I think if you don't present a candidate father for testing, the baby's DNA and the mother's DNA is held until a paternal sample, right? A male sample to be tested for paternity. For minor children, for minors who have been impregnated, period, paternity, some method of being able to should be operated, right? Like, we need to do something. It's a balance of rights. We balance in the right of privacy of the mother.
I just gonna ask, shouldn't I have a right to privacy for my own DNA? Say, man, you can't force me to give you my DNA.
Right, well, this is it. We balance in the right to privacy of, like, bodily integrity and privacy of information, like behavioral information, but we have to balance that with the right of the child to know, right, who their father is. And for, you know, psychological and emotional reasons, for financial reasons, for legal and logistical reasons, the child has a right to know, and all of these things must be balanced. There's something else the texter said. You got the texter again, Mr. Newry?
Yes, they want to know about the publishing the names and the publishing the names and pictures.
So we bringing it back. Thank you to language and culture. We have a sex offenders registry. We were told that it's not to expect that the names added to the registry would be published or be made available to the public. And the text has said that people who commit statutory rape, now known as unlawful sexual intercourse, should be put on the sex offender registry. Then they should, and we should know who they are. It seems less and less likely, though, that that's going to happen, because all of the language used by those responding to queries and concerns about the change in language, right, from rape to sexual assault and from statutory rape to unlawful sexual intercourse, we are being made to feel like this is, let's go to that caller, this is not a real serious offense, not enough to put on a registry. Okay. Good morning, caller.
Caller, Patrick, caller through there. Mm-hmm. Caller, can you hear me?
Yes, hello.
Hello, go ahead.
Hello.
Yes. I mean, I'm listening to what you're talking about. We had this conversation about 2 or 3 years ago, and we were talking about young girls being impregnated. And my response to that was, at that time, and we're now still talking about it today, if we are serious, we would get the name from the young girl when she's in the hospital. And you start from there. She would have to give a name, and then you do a DNA. But it goes to show in our society, if you are nobody, they don't want you to be the father. But if you are somebody, they'll take you to hell and back to get you in jail or get you in trouble or to get you to sign papers. So what is it now? Do we let them nobodies just get away with it because they don't want to take it into court? Or we take the ones to court who we think who could pay and take care of the time? I'm looking for your response.
I appreciate that, Carla.
I think it's really about the care about the child. Who cares about the unborn child, the newly born child? Who cares enough about the child to ensure that they have every resource that should be available to them? Right? It is a tricky space to be in, to balance the rights of all three people involved. The mother that birthed the child, and the father that helped to bring the egg to life, right? These three things have to be balanced. I don't think the right to privacy of the mother and the right to privacy of the father supersede the right of the child to know. However, let's go into that hospital room where you want to ask, particularly the minor child, because it's all women who give birth, but the minor child who is giving birth to a young girl who's giving birth, something want to tell you because she has been threatened, right? There are many instances where the victims of rape say that the perpetrator told me that he or she is going to kill my mother. They're going to kill me. They will kill my family. They will kill my friends. And now, as you stand as a big person, you may see the threat as foolish. Oh, they can't be serious. But as a small child, who's already been violated, right? You could easily believe that this person can cause harm to your loved ones. And you may be so frightened that you never say who it is or you lie about it. The next thing is this. A mother, a young child desperate to ensure that their child has a good future, considering how rough their own life was, may take the risk of telling a lie or going after someone who they think can afford to give their child the life they deserve.
And there, we're going to take a quick commercial break right here. But when we come back, right, I want to discuss intent. Intent of Alison Maynard Gibson. She's a senior PLP. Surely she has the ear of the Prime Minister and the Cabinet to say, well, man, why this issue isn't being brought up yet? You're being talking and taking too long. What did Jamaica say? It's a bag of mouth, right? Why haven't it come true as yet? But anyway, let's go on this commercial break and come right back.
To you. Would you like to give your child an Easter basket filled to the brim with chocolate bunnies, surprise eggs, gift certificates, and more? Then you should enter your child into the NASA Guardians Easter Coloring Contest. There are three different categories, 5 to 6, 7 to 9, and 10 to 13. Deadline for entry is Monday, April 3rd at 4 p.m. Purchase your copy of the NASA Guardian to get your Easter Coloring Contest sign-up form. I'll let your children color away and win one of three baskets filled to the brim with Easter goodies from the NASA Guardian. The NASA Guardians Easter Coloring Contest. For more information, call 302-0.
Well done, Easter bunnies. Good job.
Girl, you see how Cora eye look funny all black up yesterday?
But she say she bump into a wall when she's running after the churn them.
Yeah, but last Saturday you see her arm is all black and blue, right?
What you saying? You think something wrong between her and Jack?
I ain't sure, but you know Jack is a jealous man. I hear him and Cora last Friday. I hear him say he hear Cora have eyes for Junior.
Now you know that ain't true. Cora is a good woman. Does mind her business, take care of them churn and go to church every Sunday. So what you think we should do?
I think we should report Jack, you know. Cora don't say nothing, but silence hides violence. And we don't want to line up in the cemetery.
Not me. I ain't getting in nobody business. Then Jack come after me and I line up next to Cora.
No, man, we could call her text Crime Stopper. And remember, we can even get some grocery money for our tip.
Remind me again how this work.
We can call them in Miami at 328-TIPS or 328-8477. Or when we in the island, call toll-free at 300-TIPS or 300-8477. And if you don't have no minutes, use the Crack Crime Bahamas app and we could text them. And the messages get on mix-up before it leave you. So nobody can know what you're saying.
So what are we waiting on then? Let's go earn some grocery money.
And welcome back to On the Clock with Aaron Green. This is C.A. Nuri, who's in studio. And of course, Aaron is joining us via Zoom. And we're having a discussion about intent now. The intent of the former Attorney General bringing this issue up about rape. Get it done, she says. I want to analyze it. If she has the air of the Prime Minister and Cabinet that she can call and say, hey, man, why is the delay? What would be the reason why to bring this up? What do you think is happening, Aaron?
I tell you, the former Attorney General and former Minister for Legal Affairs was speaking at a workshop, actually, when she made these comments, both sets of comments, specifically about marital rape and then about the citizenship bills that were addressed in the gender equality referendum, right? So that's why I think she made the commentary. But I got another question about intent, Mr. Nuri. I want to ask those that organized. I mean, it seems like it was a wonderful event, Advancing Gender Equality and the Empowerment of Women and Girls in the Bahamas workshop held at the Island House on Friday. I want to talk about intent for a moment. Why would you host this workshop when two of your leading advocates on issues dealing with women, particularly women on the margins, vulnerable women, it's Alicia Wallace from Equality Bahamas and Alexis DeMarco. Why would you host this event while they're in Geneva presenting to the CEDAW committee on similar issues? I mean, why not host this event before their meeting so that they could go to the meeting informed with more information from the state, from regional partners, and from local women? Mm. Or host the workshop post the Geneva session so that you could include input from those advocates and their experiences interacting with the CEDAW committee and the responses of the committee and the Bahamas government in your workshop. But I can sit there because we've talking about exclusion and inclusion, and I'm trying to figure out how could you have a gender, advancing gender equality and empowerment of women and girls in the Bahamas workshop and not invite the only person who got the gender equality referendum right to the table. It suggests to me that you all have an agenda that's not focused on what work is going on in the country, but focused on what work you want to go on in the country. It all raises questions of intent for me, Mr. Nuri. But more importantly, why are we not making the connections between the language and progression of the law and the work that we're doing at these events? And I think that's why we're missing the most important part, the meetings, all of the talking, but here we are not recognizing rape as rape and insisting on calling it sexual assault.
And I see you being analytical again, right? And I'll go further. Where Island House is again? You know how far that is from the inner city and how to get people there? And the issue is about, I remember there was an issue about class and inclusiveness, yeah. About one set of Bohemian women thinking a particular way and another set thinking another way, and that there was a disconnect. The idea, yeah, that there is still a separation of the movement of those who seemingly have from those who have not. It doesn't do well and bodes well in terms of bringing a conclusion or a united effort of pushing forward women's rights and equality. It is concerning when you have it. Mind you, I understand why they had it, but at this particular meeting was for a particular ilk of women. And you mentioned two persons were not included who went off to Geneva. They didn't want to be invited. They didn't want them there.
Right. I will say that I threw in my own little shade. I'm trying to think now. What is the conversation you're having about gender equality if you don't have the gender experts at the table? And you miss, there's at least three of us, and you miss three of us at the meeting.
I have a text here. I'm going to edit it. And for you to answer, and that's why I interjected, yes, because I wanted, this is the text that you need to answer. The text is asking, why should Miss DeMarco be included?
Miss DeMarco should be included because she advocates for the rights of intersex and trans women.
And they should, right? And you're saying that, and let's make it controversial, you're saying that trans women should be included in this equality for women conversation.
Yes, and even if, yes, I think so. And even if you don't think so, intersex women should be included in the conversation, right? Intersex is a medical condition. We know it commonly as an hermaphrodite, someone who presents with either both chromosomal or biological or physical markers of sex, right? And those women, even if you don't believe in trans rights, you don't believe in trans people, science, medicine has shown us that intersex people exist, and intersex people who identify as female, who are predominantly presenting as female women, and they have rights that need to be protected.
I sent a text sent it, and the conversation that happened all the way out west, and the apparent not including them into this conversation, it tells a tale on who the audience this particular event was for. I just want to indicate right. that.
And you know, and I want to say that trying to make the work easy is not the way to go about it. Like, trying to make the work easy, like, listen, if we don't, it's such a hot topic, if we don't invite them, we could just get through the day.
Yeah, but that's not. Some things is complicate things, though, Aaron. You don't want to complicate things.
That's like saying that we have to figure out what to do with the sharks because they make going in the water so complicated. We're going to have to kill the sharks. I mean, no. Trying to remove the sharks from their natural habitat is not the answer to making the ocean safer for humans. In the same way, suggesting, just like in the referendum, because you see what happened in the referendum.
They say you complicated things. That's what happened in the referendum.
Look here, didn't they say that? But it turns out that they wanted to discriminate against the group most vulnerable to sex-based discrimination.
And this is why you weren't invited to go west.
In an exercise to ensure that nobody would suffer from sex-based discrimination. Imagine saying that to make sure that nobody suffers from sex-based discrimination. The people who are most vulnerable to it, well, they're going to have to suffer from it. That's the only solution we could find. That's madness. We have to sit down and do the hard work. That's all.
So let's talk about moving going forward. Right, we talk about intent. We talk about exclusion and inclusion. We talk about women's rights. We talk about the changing of this word rape. Right, moving forward, what should be the conversation?
It should be a conversation about inclusiveness, not exclusiveness. Right? Imagine that we could work. We could work towards eradicating violence against LGBTI people without ever using the word LGBTI, right? Because we focus on the principle that everyone has a right to a life free of violence. See, now when you jump up at me, oh, but Miss Green, that's a trans. They deserve that, right? Then I could say to you, do you know that they are trans? Just because they tell you they are trans, does that mean that they are trans? What does it matter? What matters is that they are human and what you're doing to them is intolerable. It's inappropriate. It's not on. It's criminal. Stop it. It does not matter what you think of them or what they think of themselves. The act, whether it's physical, emotional, or psychological, or financial even, is violence, right? And that's the approach that I would take and that we can take to include as many people as possible. Everyone, regardless of what you think of them or they think of themselves, has a right to a life free of violence.
And I see we have 2 minutes, Erin, but I want you to answer this too. Right? There are a number of broad topic, and forgive me for doing this the last second. There are a number of women who think that their rights, their womanhood, their femininity is being robbed, right? Taken advantage of by all of these subgroups. And moving to this equality group, I think that they are thinking that perhaps this is a distraction from their overall or main goal of getting women's rights.
There is that belief. Absolutely. There is that belief. And it's worthy of interrogation, without a doubt. Without a doubt. These are the conversations that we have to have. It is our biases that prevent us from having the conversation. It is our lack of respect for one another across the board that prevents us from having the conversations and diving in to the answers.
Good. Yeah, but I see it's at 11 o'clock hour. We got to go. Please join me on my next side of the show because I have something interesting I want you to come. Stay online on Zoom. And next will be Guiding Radio in the AM with C.A. Nuri. And, of course, Erin Green is committing now to join me. And we can talk some immigration. We'll be right back.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.